So thank you for the introduction, and thank you, Zhiwen, for inviting me here for PI. And thank you, everybody, for coming to this talk. And I'll be very happy to talk about my recent work, which is about a question that is always asked in the resource theoretical work, which is about the operational characterization of resources. So when people say operational characterization, operational interpretation, there will be some ambiguity here. But in this work, I will specifically focus on something that word resource literally suggests, which is something that gives you the operational advantage for a physical task. It turns out that the discrimination tasks are not only the fundamental operational task in the quantum information theory, but also the nice platforms that allow one to provide the unified understanding of resources. And I'm going to extend the discussion of the state to even measurements and channels of quantum dynamics, and also beyond quantum mechanics, which is related to the general probabilistic theories. So this talk is going to be based on these two papers, and I will mostly focus on telling you the main ideas and the results of the work, then not go into that much details about the proofs of the results. So if you're interested in the details, I would like you to refer to these two papers. Okay, I will start with the introduction and motivation. The contents of this work are nicely represented in this title of the talk, as well as the title of the second reference, I think. But I need to explain like those words, like general resource theories, and what do I mean by like beyond and operational characterization and discrimination tasks. So I'll start with the resource theories. So resource theories are the mathematical frameworks that that deal with the quantification and the manipulation of some physical quantities that are considered precious under a given setting. So for instance, the famous example is a theory of entanglement. Then there are some of the important concepts in this resource theoretical framework, which include the set of free states or set of free operations, a resource quantifier. So these free resources, free states and free operations, are something that you have access for free. So you're given that free resources. So this framework itself is pretty general, and it can be applied to various kinds of resources. And it is a nice way to deal with different types of quantities on the same footing. So these are the famous examples for that. The first one is entanglement. Then you know that the set of separable states are something that are not entangled. And you take the free states being the set of separable states. Then if you're thinking about the situation where you have only access to local operation and classical communication, and your free operation would be LOCC, then there are many ways to quantify the entanglement. But one of the popular ways to do that would be to measure the distance between your given state to your its closest separable states with respect to the relative entropy measure. So this is something called relative entropy of entanglement. But you can apply the similar idea to the different resource, for instance, coherence, which quantifies the superposition with respect to your preferred given basis. Then now your free states are something called incoherent states, whose density and matrices have only diagonal with respect to that given preferred basis. Then for free operations for that, you can take something that do not create coherence from the incoherent states. There are many ways to take that, but you know, incoherent operations are some of the you know, popular ways to do it. Then to measure coherence, you can apply a similar idea from an entanglement, then now the, can measure the distance from your state, coherent state, to its closest incoherent state with respect to relative entropy measure, then you get the relative entropy of coherence. So you can even extend those similar discussions to the different type of resources like non-Gaussianity or magic states in the Fortran quantum computation, which I'm gonna mention in a bit. But although that framework itself is pretty general and you can apply that idea to the different type of resources, still once you set up your situation, what's been happening so far is that the specific theory, individual resource theory, has developed quite in a separate fashion, like in each way. It's nice in the sense that it gives you the deeper understanding for the specific resources, but at the same time, it doesn't give you much insight about how to generally understand those separate resources in more unified fashion, in a way that you can extract a common feature that's shared by the wide classes of the theories. But despite the generality of that framework of the research theory, there's a limited number of results known along this line, because it's hard to extract the useful information keeping that level of generality. But in this work, we're interested in that aspect of resource theory, and specifically we'd like to add a new item to this list with regards to the operational characterization and especially operational advantage for physical tasks enabled by resources. So what do I mean by that? So in principle, you can take any set of states and you declare it to free states. And in that formalism, you can anything outside of a set of free states is considered a resource state. But you can ask, like, is that resource for what? Like, having that resource state, does that help you anything? So if I phrase that question, I can come up with like these two sub-questions. The first one is there any operational task in which possessing that resource state helps you to accomplish it? And if the answer is yes for the first question, we can still ask like, how much is it? And how is that related to the resource contents that you have? One of the possible ways to approach this problem would be to consider the resource distillation, like the entanglement distillation, where you have some noisy entangled state and you know try to extract some maximal entangled state, for instance. If you can do that, then it suffices to consider a specific task in which that maximally resourceful state helps you to accomplish it, like quantum teleportation, if you have a maximally entangled state and you can run it quite a good way. But there's a subtlety when you try to generalize this idea, because you're not sure if there exists always such a nice task for general theories. And also, there is some subtlety for the bound resource state problem. So there is a class of the entangled state that's called bound entangled states, which you can't just extract any maximally entangled state from. Then there's a bound resource for the another theory as well, actually, like the theory of coherence or a theory of magic. Those theories also have a bound resource state. And for instance, bound entangled states are known to be useless for the quantum teleportation protocol. So we might need a little bit different approach and another idea to approach this problem. Is there any operational task utilizing resources in general? So this is the question we are asking. Still, we want to answer these two questions. Is there any such an operational task? And how much is it? What's the quantification of it at the general level? And what we find in this work is that it's actually that the case that every resource state for any convex theory is useful for a subchannel discrimination task, which I'm going to explain in a bit. And for the second question, the resource measure code generalized robustness measure serves as an exact quantifier in a class of subchannel discrimination tasks for any finite dimensional convex theory. So these results assure you that it's actually meaningful somehow to have a resource state in your hand for any case. So let's look at the subchannel discrimination. This is the generalization of a channel discrimination problem, which is well known for a while. So imagine that you have some channel lambda, which is decomposed into some sum of subchannels, which is a trace non-increasing map. Then your task is the following. So you input your state row, and you promise that one of the subchannels is applied to your input state row, and you make a measurement at the end, and you're trying to guess which subchannel was chosen then was acted on the state rule. Then the success probability, like I write like this. So this is the average success probability of the subchannel discrimination task defined by this set of subchannels I, and you use a measurement, a POVM measurement MI, and this is your input state rule. The average success probability of this task is written like this. So in the case of channel discrimination problem, if you think about like you have two channels and each of which is sampled at 50% probability, and a subchannel is gonna look like 1/2 times, you know, lambda zero plus 1/2 times lambda one. So this includes that subchannel, the channel discrimination. Now I'm gonna talk about the resource measures, which turned out to be playing a key role in the discrimination tasks, which is called robustness measures. So these are called robustness measures because it quantifies how, in some sense, how robust the resource in your hand is against a mixture of another state. So there are two types of the, mainly two types of resource measure, robustness measures. One is called a standard robustness measure, and the second one is generalized robustness measure. So if you look at this definition, actually it's easier to look at this picture, I guess. So this row is a given state, and you're gonna mix this free state sigma with this original state row so that it becomes free. So like this mixture of these two states becomes free. So you're gonna take a minimum level of the mixture until this resource state row becomes free because of the mixture. The generalized robustness is different in that sigma that is going to be mixed with the original state rho doesn't have to be in the free set of free states. So this sigma can be outside of this set of free states. So this is called generalized robustness. So these two robustness measures were introduced in context of the theory of entanglement, but recently the constellation was extended to like more general theories. But you can easily show that these two measures have some properties, desired properties for them to be valid resource measures. The first one is like they are faithful, meaning that it gives you zero if and only if your state row is a free state. And it is a convex measure with respect to your state over here. And it's called, it is monotonically non-increasing under free operations. So this E is in a free operation. So remember, a free operation is something that you can't create a resource from the free states. So you want the resource, valid resource measures to not to increase under free operations, otherwise it doesn't make sense. So for this reason, the valid resource measures are also called resource monotones. So these are valid resource monotones. And this generalized robustness measure is an interesting measure in that it appears here and there. Then it was shown that this, for instance, plays a key role in the task of catalytic erasure of the resource one-shot dilution protocol for the resource. And this is actually equivalent to something called max relative entropy measure. And as a side note, for those who are interested, so these robustness measures are tightly connected to the quantities that are recently discussed in the context of classical simulation of quantum circuits. So if you think about something called the theory of magic, where you take the set of free states F being something called stabilizer states, the stabilizer state is the set of convex mixture of pure stabilizer state, which is which you can get by applying the Clifford gate on the computational basis state. So 2 years ago, the robustness of magic was introduced by Howard and Campbell. Then their quantity looked like this. So you look at this row and the decomposition into the stabilizer states, and you're gonna take a minimum sum of the absolute value of the coefficients. And they introduced the classical algorithm to simulate the quantum circuit whose runtime is scaling exponentially with this robustness of magic measure. But But you can convince yourself that this is equivalent to the 1 plus 2 times standard robustness measure of magic in our definition over here. And also, last year, the Stabler's extent was introduced and discussed. So this was defined for the pure state. And again, the idea is based on the decomposition of a pure state into the Stabler's pure states. But actually, it was shown that this Stabler's extent is equivalent to the generalized robustness of magic in our definition, shown also last year. So it might give you a different perspective of these two measures as well in the different context.
Generalized with respect to mixing what kind of state?
Any state. And then I'm going to talk about the quantum mechanics and the beyond part, which is a general probabilistic theory. It's also called GPTs. So in the theory, in the research of quantum foundation, the interesting question is what singles out of quantum mechanics and why the quantum mechanics? So for that problem, it's insightful to look at the quantum mechanics as a special theory of the more general family of theories than that are called general probabilistic theories, or GPTs. Then I'm talking about this because it turns out that a measure of our results are applicable not only quantum mechanics, but also the other GPTs as well. So this is a very brief introduction of GPTs. But if you're interested in the details, like there are many references out there. But yeah, here's a very brief introduction. So like GPT is specified by the underlying vector space V and the proper cone living in the vector space V, this is C, and some unit defect that is living in the dual space of this vector space V. So you can think of in a quantum mechanics case, this V is a set of Hermitian operators, and this proper cone C is like positive semi-definite matrices. Then this U is like identity operators with Schmidt trace inner product. Then once you define your proper cone C, then you can find the dual cone C star. Then that's Then that gives you only the non-negative value if you take a combination with the element in the cone C. So then once you define the cone and dual cone, that defines the partial order in that space in the way that B is greater than or equal to A if and only if B minus A is a member of that cone. Once you set up, you can now think about the analogous concepts that you see in the quantum mechanics. The states are something in the cone, if you take the combination with a unit effect, it gives you one. So this corresponds to trace one. Trace is one condition for the quantum state. Then this effect, which corresponds to the POVM element, is defined in this way. The measurements are the collection of that effects of POVMs in the quantum mechanics case, and this is going to sum up to the unit effect. And channels is something that maps your state to state. Then we can assume that we have access to identity channel and also the measure and prepare channel in our work, which is pretty reasonable assumption, I guess. So here is a table of the correspondence between the GPTs and the quantum mechanics. As I briefly said, this vector space V corresponds to Hermitian operators, and state cone C is like positive semi-definite operators. The states are density operators, effects are POVM elements, unit effect is identity operators, measurement is a POVM measurement, and bilinear form is Hilbert-Schmidt inner product. So you see quantum mechanics as a special case of this GPT. Then let me briefly make a note about the assumption that we make in this work. So when I say convex result theory, which means that the set of your free stuff, like free state, and I'm going to actually talk about the measurement as well, the free things are the convex and the closed set, then we're going to always assume that. The convex means that if you take a classical mixture, probabilistic mixture of two free objects, it doesn't create any resource, so it's still free. And the closedness refers to the continuity of the free resources. So if you take a sequence of the free states or free objects, it also ends up with free objects. So that's we always assume that. So having said those things, I'm gonna sort of summarize what we do in this work. So we connect two core concepts of resource theories, which is the quantification and the manipulation of resources, with respect to the performance of discrimination tasks for general types of resources, not only entanglement and coherence, but general convex resource theories at the level of not only quantum mechanics, but also general probabilistic theories. So then let's go and look at the results. The first one is the question that I posed, the first question, the existence part. Is there any operational task in which possessing the resource state helps to accomplish it? So remind yourself that this is a setting that we were talking about, the subchannel discrimination task. You have the state row, and you input, then one of the subchannels is applied to row, and you're going to measure it at the end and try to tell which subchannel was chosen. Then this is a success probability for that.
Sorry.
Yes?
Question. Are we supposed to think of these objects as GPT objects? Or are these like a quantum state and quantum channels? And
unless specified, you can think of it as a GPT state. So like in any GPT, you can consider this state as a state defined in any GPT that's given. So it doesn't have to be.
This is a statement that you claim in a general GPT.
Yeah, yes. Then what we found is that, so this set F, again, is a convex and closed set of free states. Then if this row is outside of F, meaning that this row is a resource state, then there exists a subchannel discrimination task where this row gives you the strict advantage over the situation where you only have the access to the free states. So this numerator part tells you that the success probability for this subchannel discrimination task defined by this set of subchannels and measurement M and state row, and you take a maximum, I mean best measurement strategy over there, and you compare that to the something where you don't have any resource for the input state. Then you take a best strategy for the free state input, then there's a strict advantage for that. Yes?
In the subchannel discrimination task, you said the set, the state row is fixed?
Row is known state.
It's known.
Yeah.
So what's the difference between that and just state discrimination?
So state discrimination, you can see this as a state discrimination of, I mean, the task where you try to discriminate the state, psi I of rho. So this is pretty much a state discrimination task after this part. So you,
right.
Yeah, so this is a state discrimination at this point.
So I'm guessing there's a difference whenever you start quantifying this, right? Because now you, you have some freedom to choose row.
So we are interested in the describing the resourcefulness of this row. So once you're given row, and what's the row that the row can play. So that's why I want to fix this row, because this is what you're interested in. And instead, you're gonna play around with this channel so that this can characterize the resourcefulness of row.
In this statement, are the free operations playing any role at all? Like, are they?
No, like for this, like we don't consider free operations.
So is this not just like optimizing, so is the numerator just optimizing over a larger set than the denominator, and that's why you get place bigger, or is that what's going on or not?
So this is like It's not a larger set, because this row is outside of this free state. So this we're comparing the different thing.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so the idea behind this is actually pretty simple. So you start with the Hamm Banach separation theorem, then you can always, you know, there always exists some functional W, which is called witness, and it separates your resource state rho from the set of free states F. That because this is convex, so you can use this as separation type of argument. Then using this witness operator W, you come up with actually two channels, lambda 0 and lambda 1, so that this rho gives you the strict advantage over the over a situation where you only have free states as inputs. This is a rough idea. There's some calculation going on, but this is what's happening. So again, I only assume the convexity and closeness of the set of free states. So this is pretty general. And also, it automatically gives you the operational assuring and interpretation to every resource state, including now the bound states. So bound entangled, not only bound entangled states, but bound magic states, the bound genuine non-Gaussian Gaussian state. It gives you some operational interpretation. As far as I know, for instance, this bound magic state had only a very limited operational understanding for the very limited class of the qubit state or something like that.
States are also on the non-maximal set of
preoperations. Yes. For maximal, we don't really know. Yeah.
Question. Now we are moving to like a result that come out of the construction. Are you coming back to the kind of what do you need from the GPT and the resource theory to make the proof work? Are we coming back to that later?
Actually, we don't need the extra assumption to make it work.
So maybe I have a quick question there. How do you know that the channel you constructed in the previous page is actually, like for example, in quantum theory, we want like CPTP channels.
Mm-hmm.
How do you define like the set of channels, or if there are like additional restrictions on the channel, or do you know that what you defined in the previous slide would work?
So you can choose any physically implementable channels. Assumption, strictly speaking, I made is that you have access to the measurement prepared channel, because that's what we used for the constructions.
Okay.
Yeah. But other than that, it's okay. Okay, so this is for the second question. What about the quantification part? What is the relation between the advantage and the discrimination task and the amount of resources? Okay. For that, let's look at this rate, this quantity. This is the advantage that rho provides for discriminating subchannels psi I with measurements mi, if you look at that. Then what is the maximum rate of this value over all the subchannel discrimination tasks as well as the measurements? So this quantity over here. Then we can show that the generalized robustness that I introduced before exactly quantifies this such a maximal advantage that a resource state can provide over the set of free states. So 1 plus generalized robustness. So I think this result is interesting in two senses. The first one is it gives you the exact quantification of the maximum advantage of this rate for this generalized robustness using this generalized robustness. And also the second one is that from the result theoretical perspective, it gives you the operational meaning to the generalized robustness measure in a very general in a general sense. Because like, yeah.
Sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt.
Okay.
How many measurements and channels attain this maximum? Is
that
a binary, two channels? Or?
So it's not unique, but I can make two, or I can make D, where D is the dimension of your dimension of your system.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So the resource measures. The condition for something, some function to be a valid resource measure is actually quite loose. So if you remember back the phase four property, it gives you zero if and only if the resource is zero. Or, you know, at least if it satisfies the monotonicity under free operations, that's called resource monotones. So there are many such functions that are out there, but what differentiates the good resource measures from the bad resource measures is that there are many factors for it, but one of the important one is to whether it has some operational meaning. What does it mean? So is it connected to any physical operational task? So what I mean by giving operational meaning for that is, you know, connect that quantity to some operational task. So the general robustness measure RF now gains the physical meaning. Now, you know, this guy is not only the valid resource measure, but also operationally meaningful measure. And for a general sense, for the general convex resource theory. Then let me comment on the standard robustness measure, actually. I found it personally interesting. So again, this is a standard robustness measure definition, where this sigma is in the set of free states now. And by definition, the generalized robustness measure is smaller than or equal to the standard robustness measure. And the peculiar difference between these two measures is that this standard robustness measure can diverge for some important theories like coherence. So if you look at this row as a coherent state, so imagine your density matrix has some of diagonal element, then no matter how much you mix your incoherent state, which is diagonal states, you can't never make it a diagonal state. So it just diverges. So it may be, it may appear that it's implausible to give operational meaning to this standard robustness measure in a general sense. But it turns out that like more fundamental channel discrimination tasks, like 50-50 two channel discrimination tasks, like 1/2 lambda 0 and 1/2 lambda 1, is tightly connected to that standard robustness measure. So the meaningful figure of merit for this task is to look at the success gain of the success probability because of this resource, because random guess gives you the 1/2 success probability. So let's take a difference between the success probability and 1/2. Then we can show that the maximal advantage that this resource state row can provide is exactly quantified by this 1+2 times standard robustness measure. So first comment is that this diverging property is covered by this, because in that case, the denominator approaches 0 for that case. And you can also say that for such a theory, the free state doesn't give you any advantage for this type of task. And also, like, this form is kind of interesting, 1+2 times standard robustness. So as I briefly mentioned, you know, this 1+2 times standard robustness was the robustness of magic introduced by Howard and Campbell, and it quantified the classical simulation cost for the quantum circuits. So now we are talking about a very different operational task, but this is quantified by this form. So it's kind of interesting to see that. Okay, so I've been only talking about the state so far, but there's no reason to stop here, because the states are not only one that the resource can live. And you can also think about, so like I implicitly assume like I have arbitrary access to any measurements for the channel discrimination task. But you can also consider the situation where you only have access to the limited class of measurements, like maybe the convex combination of Pauli measurements in the quantum computation case, or if there's so much decoherence, then maybe the incoherent measurement, which is a measurement with, with respect to the preferred basis. The nice thing about the resource theoretical framework, again, is that you can employ a similar idea to this measurement setting as well. So let's do that. So now I can imagine, then define the set of free effects, EF, and this free measurement is defined by the combination, the collection of the free effects, so that it sums to the unit effect. Then you can now draw a similar picture like here. So this is a set of free measurements, M of F. Then your given measurement over here, which is a resource measurement, is sitting here. And you can even imagine the set of free operations that maps your free measurements into free measurements. That's applied onto the measurements. So the example of that includes the trivial measurement, which was quite recently discussed by Paul Sklitzik and then Noah Linden. And they set this set of free measurements being a trivial measurements. Trivial measurement is something that doesn't give you any information. So that all the POVMs are proportional to identity operators. But you know, I mean, there's no reason to like just to think about trivial measurement. You can just take any set of measurements being free measurements over here. So it's like separable measurements, incoherent measurements, et cetera. Once you set up the setting, and natural question, of course, is how do we quantify the resourcefulness of measurements if you're given the resource measurements? Well, so as you can imagine, maybe, we can think about the robustness measure again for this measurement stuff as well. So let's introduce this generalized robustness measure for measurements. Now, it's defined by this. Like now, you can again look at this picture. This is your resource measurement M. Then you're going to mix this another measurements and maybe outside of the free measurements, then so that the mixture of it becomes a free measurement. Then it's straightforward stuff to check those properties that it is faithful. It gives you zero if and only if M is in the free measurements. And this is convex. And this is a monotone in two senses. The one is that this is like the first one is closer to the state case, where if you take the free operations, then it it doesn't increase. But this is like a pre-processing idea where you apply some channel before your measurements, and you see that channel as a transformation to the measurements that's following it, in a way that the dual of the channel applies to the measurement and transforms that measurement. But you can take another manipulation of a resource measurements, which is a classical post-processing. So you make a measurement using this measurement M, then you make a classical post-processing and have a different measurement M prime. Then after some calculation, you can also show that the generalized robustness measure does not increase under that classical post-processing manipulation, so like this. Okay, so then now that we define the resource measure, and we can now, again, the important question to ask, is there any operational meaning to this generalized robustness measure? So again, we ask the same question. Is there anything good to have that resourceful measurements? And if so, how much? And is that at all like related to the generalized robustness measure I introduced? And I introduced that because it's related, right? So I can draw the similar conclusions. Every resource measurement with respect to any convex free measurements is useful for some now state discrimination task. And generalized robustness measure still serves as a good quantifier for that. So now let's think about this state discrimination setting, where now you sample your some state according to this prior distribution, and you make a measurement at the end, and you're gonna guess which state was sampled. So like your success probability for the state discrimination task using this measurement M is written by this formula. And again, what we can show is that now the generalized robustness quantifies the maximal achievable advantage over that state discrimination tasks, comparing to the situation where you only have the free measurements. Then this result, note that this result encapsulates two questions already, because this RFM is a faithful measure. So if M is a resource measurement, then it's strictly greater than zero. So it gives you the strict advantage, and this quantification is done by this generalized robustness measure. So let me talk about like one of the applications of the results in terms of like a data hiding type of setting. So this is a situation where entangled measurements can outperform the separable measurements for decoding a message that is encoded into like two alphabets. So now in this situation, you can take this set of free measurements as a separable measurements for the original like setting, then the relevant figure of merit for this setting is something called data hiding ratio, which corresponds to this. Like you take a difference from the random guess and you compare the situation where you only have the separable measurements and arbitrary measurements. But our result gives you kind of an alternative rate for that, and it gives you kind of like this formula for not only two element ensemble, but n element ensemble. And you can take any set of free measurements for this. And it gives you, so it's characterized by the generalized robustness measure. Then if you want, you can take this maximum, you can change this maximum depending on the physical setting you're interested in to the more restricted set of measurements if you want. Now let's go further, and there's no reason to stop here either. The channels can be also resourceful, right? So for instance, in the entanglement theory, if you have an entangling gate, you can create an entanglement, which happens in many cases. So you want to kind of, you know, incorporate that in the resourcefulness of the channels. And this resource theory of channel has gained a lot of attention recently. And some papers, like including the recent one from Zhu En, were like arising these days. But this, we can apply again the similar picture for that to quantify the resourcefulness of channels. So imagine now this OF is a set of free channels. But now there are at least like two ways of thinking about this set of free channels. One is that you are based on the underlying theory of states. So you define, so you are thinking about some underlying some resource theory of states with set of free states F. And you define your set of free channels as something that doesn't create any resource from the free states, which is defined by this theory of states. So this is like more like close to the traditional free operation idea for the resource theory of states. The relevant quantifier for the such approach would be resource generating power. So like you measure the power of the channel using the resource measure defined for the theory of states. I'm gonna talk about this in a bit. But another possible approach is to take, you start from the set of free operations OF, then now everything outside of the set of free channels is a resourceful channel. So this is like close to the approach that I've been talking about for the resource theory of measurements as well. Then the relevant set of resource quantifiers is robustness of channels. So here's a resource generating power part. So imagine this kind of quantity. There are several ways to think about this, but let's take this resource generating power as something that this channel can generate from the free states with respect to the generalized robustness measure. Okay, then now you can ask the operational meaning question. What does it mean to have this resource generating power? And now think about the channel assisted state discrimination task, actually free state discrimination task. So imagine this kind of picture where this sigma I is a free state and you're gonna sample some state and you apply this channel over here and make a measurement and guess which state was sampled. So the success probability can be calculated like this. And what you can show is that if you compare that situation and a situation where you don't have that channel, then the maximal advantage that this channel can provide is now the resource generating power for the channel. What about the robustness for channels? Again, this is a similar picture. You can define this robustness for channels. For technical reason, I'm now thinking about the quantum mechanics, but if you add another assumption, then you can lift to GPTs. So this channel, again, think about this channel assisted state discrimination task, but for now, this state doesn't have to be free state anymore, some state discrimination. But you know, imagine this composite system instead, then apply this channel to the subsystem for the composite systems and make a measurement and try to guess which state was sampled. And what we can show here is that, so this generalized robustness measure for channel quantifies the advantage that this channel can provide over the choice of the free channels. So this is pretty similar similar results that we had for this robustness measures. And this all encapsulated in the discrimination tasks. So far, I was talking about the quantification part of the resources, and that's mainly, you know, quantified by the generalized robustness measure. Sometimes it's another robustness measure for state case and channel resource generating power for a channel case, but mostly generalized robustness measure. So we connected the quantification of resources to the performance of the discrimination tasks for general type of resources and at the level of GPTs. But this is just one part of the story, because resource theory also has another part, which is the manipulation part. Manipulation of a resource, what can you do with the restricted settings? So the big question for the manipulation part is the following. This is an example for a state case. Can state rho be transformed to state sigma by free operations in OF? So this is a pretty hard question in general. And if we think about is there any help that we can borrow from this quantification part to ask to answer this question, what can a resource monotone R say about this? Then what we can say is that if there is such a transformation from rho to sigma by free operations, definitely your resourcefulness measured by any resource measure should be satisfying this. So like rho should have more resources than sigma for any. So this is sort of the definition of a resource monotone. But in general, converse is not true. So if you only look at one resource monotone, it's not enough to tell if the transformation is possible or not. So if it's one is not enough, then why don't we look at the more resource measures? So let's think about instead the family of monotones. This is Ri, then labeled by I. Then if you nicely choose the set of such a monotones, then sometimes it can fully characterize the state transformations. So if rho is more resourceful than sigma for any resource monotone in this family, then it implies that this transformation is possible. So this such a set is called a complete set of monotones. So which is a key idea of the the connection between quantification and the manipulation part. But actually, always you can find such a complete set of monotones. Here's how it is. So let's label every state by some index. Then define Rij is 1 if there exists such a transformation from J to I, I mean state labeled by J to state labeled by I, and define 0 otherwise. Then this kind of function, you can convince yourself that this this serves as a complete set of monotones. Okay, but obviously we would like to have something nicer, because okay, first of all, this has an uncountably infinite number of elements in this family, and also like it doesn't give you any like physical intuition like if you just look at this. So at least like, we want to have some family of monotones that with a much simpler structure, or at least I want it to correspond to some physical operational task, and there's some operational meaning tied to it. So I'm gonna look at the second aspect. Then what can we do with respect to this question in terms of the discrimination task? So that's what I'm going to do. So first, let's think about the state transformation. So this, let's think about the resource theory of states. Then this set of free operations O, let's take this set as something convex and closed, and also closed under the concatenation, like this. So as long as this set satisfies these two properties, then it's okay. But it's natural to think that this set of this O is set of free operations. So I just call it free operations. Then now for that, let's think about the pre-processed channel discrimination like this. So you input some state rho, and you apply some free operation C, and now sample the channel and apply one of them, and make a measurement and try to guess which channel was applied. Then you take the best strategy in terms of the choice of your free operation that is acted on here, and I call it the P2, the success, which is a success probability for such a task. Okay. Then turns out that this class of discrimination tasks serves as a complete set of monotones for state transformations in this way. So there exists the transformation from rho to sigma if and only if for all channel ensemble and measurements it holds that this rho is rho is better than sigma in terms of this operational tasks. But those who want to have a more simpler form, I can actually give you a little simpler form, and turns out that these are equivalent. So again, there exists a transformation from rho to sigma, if and only if now all two element probability distribution, so now you think about only P and 1 minus P situation, and two outcome measurements, M0 and MI, and you can just choose arbitrary fixed choice of channel theta, some theta, and the other channel you actually choose identity operator. So then think about discriminating this identity operator and this channel theta, and if this rho is better than sigma for all the measurements and probability distribution, and it still works as a complete set of monotones for the state transformations. So I found it interesting in terms of this noise detection like perspective, because identity operator and, yeah.
So is the statement that there exists such a theta, or?
You can take any theta, actually.
Even identity?
So actually, if you take identity, then it reduces to this condition.
Okay.
So this is like a simpler form, but it's like already out of the context of the discrimination task. So I'm not sure if that's like really operationally operational, but you know, you can take any theta. Then now, what about the measurement part, the measurement transformations? Now, let's think about these free operations applied to the measurements. Then again, convex and closed under concatenation for these operations. Then we can do a similar argument. So let's think about this pre-processed state discrimination task. You apply some C whose dual is now in the free operations OE. Then make a measurement and try to distinguish the states. Then, now I again define this P2, the success. And turns out that now this state, measurement transformation, you can there exists such a transformation from M to M prime, if and only if for all state ensemble, it holds that this M is better than this M prime for such a task. So this is a graphical summary of this work. So here are the two core concepts of the resource theories. Then we gave the general operational characterization to the general resource theories in terms of this discrimination task. So we connect this discrimination task with quantification part through the generalized robustness measure, sometimes standard robustness measure. And also we connect this discrimination task to the manipulation problem via complete set of monotones. Then I did not have time to talk about this, but we also connect the single shot information to the generalized robustness so that we extend this relation to that setting as well. So here's a word summary. So we show that every resource is actually useful for any setting. So every resource object in any convex theory is useful for some discrimination task. Then now, the word resource really gains a physical meaning, at least in terms of this discrimination task. And generalized robustness generally serves as an exact quantifier for class of discrimination task, and it gives you the universal operational interpretation for this resource valid resource measures, which appear here and there in a different context. Then we connect the discrimination task with the complete set of monotones, which is related to the manipulation of the resources. And finally, major part of the results hold for any GPTs. So we hope that it gives you some insight in the quantum foundation context as well. So here's some future work. One of the things that is interesting is that, you know, if there is a unified understanding of an operational task that involves the generalized robustness measure, or even standard robustness measure. The example is that classical simulation of quantum circuits was, you know, quantified by the 1 plus 2 times standard robustness. So like, is there any like more you know, relation between these different operational tasks at a more deeper level? Or what about the operational meaning of the standard robustness of measurements and channels? I talked about the state for that, but I don't have results for the measurements and channels. So that's an interesting question. And finally, for more abstract ones and superchannels. Superchannels is something that maps channels to channels. And there is some recent work going on, but you know, there is some space to look into to that subject, I guess. That's it. Thank you very much.
I like the talk very much. It's kind of a nice putting everything together. I still have a question like, about how do you construct actually the channel? Because then, like while you were talking, I was like, okay, maybe I'm going to like take my TET examples or TET resource series, and I'm trying to like feed that in. But sometimes you're not allowed like any channel in the resource theory. For example, I don't know for entanglement, maybe you want only channels that you could implement in like. In a way that does not require additional resources between the two parties. Maybe you want product channels. So I'd like to have like a bit more information about the construction that enables like the very first result.
So what was the question again?
How do you construct the channel that's going to be used? Like the like there was like one slide and then you went like quickly over it. So you like there exists an
entanglement.
Yeah. The theory of entanglement because it's clearer like. For any entangled state, there exists an entangled witness that separates that state from the set of free states. And then out of that, you construct like a channel,
yeah.
But I don't know what, like, I don't have a good perception of that construction.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, you're asking the construction part of that. Yeah.
Could you go back to that proof sketch slide?
Sure. Here you go. Yes. So this relies on the separation theorem.
Mm-hmm.
So once you find such a witness operator, then you can construct it. So that's a good question, actually. In general, there is no good way to construct it. Although, so for a special case, like a maximally entangled state or whatever, then you can find that. But that's, in general, a difficult question. That's true, yes.
So. You assumed throughout that this closeness property. So do you have a sense which of these results would fail, for example, in with LOCC, which are not closed?
Oh, this one.
Anything about the states don't work because those are closed, but the LOCC operations, I guess, what about the channel results?
So if you give up the closeness, then I guess the only problem is that your resource measure is not faithful anymore, meaning that even though it gives you zero, it can be outside of the free stuff. So it's I don't think that this is a very crucial.
I suppose if you exchange all the maximization with like suprema.
Yeah, exactly.
Suprema,
exactly.
Work out.
Yeah. I mean, I'm only concerning about. Oh yeah, true. It's like even the definition of the robustness measure. If you just take a supremum, infimum. Yeah, I think that's.
Well, unbounded won't give you a strict inequality here.
Right, that's the point.
So at some point, a lot of the strict inequalities are the weak inequalities. But I imagine it'll work.
clinging and precise like my where like I'm a bit uncertain, because these results are proved in the very abstract and general sense, which is great because then you can have this kind of blanket statement. If I take like entanglement and I get I have an entanglement witness for my state, and now I construct the so I need to implement a bipartite measurement. Let's say the state is bipartite. I need to implement a measurement that would be a u plus x over the norm of x and u minus x over the norm of x.
Mm-hmm.
Is it clear that that measurement can be implemented using, let's say, an entangled state, for example?
So I didn't look at the measurement, like explicit implementation of measurement part.
Yeah.
Just saying that there exists such a measurement.
Yeah.
So I mean. That's it. So it's there's no, if you want to look into more detail about the implementation of the measurements,
yeah.
Then now you need to really go into the details and
okay.
Yeah, it also I believe it also depends on this operator X or like how the witness operator looks like. So
for example, if I say that everything around the unit measurement U kind of like I have a ball, would that be sufficient, for example, as a condition for like to make this machinery work?
So you're saying the, say again, sorry?
Here, like, we speak about measurement in a very like general sense,
mm-hmm.
But would that be enough to say that I have a ball around like the unit measurement that's, and I can do that, like it's, can I make this work even if I have like some factors in form of the x?
But again, that might depend on x, right? So like if this x is like, very bad form, then it might require other things to do. So did you have
you can scale the W, right? And then
yeah.
X is just U minus a rescaled W.
Yeah.
And
yeah, so
that's U is the unit effect, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, so last year I saw a paper by Paul Scriptic and Ron Linden about measurement robustness and discrimination games.
Yeah.
How's your work relate with theirs, like similarities, differences, and such?
Yeah. So actually, the first reference was talking about the theory of state. So
mm-hmm.
If I go back to like this first one was talking about the state in a general sense. Then their paper was appeared almost the same time as the first one, and then they talked about. They talked about the trivial measurement as a free measurement. So this is a very special case in terms of the resource theory of measurements. So actually, I talked to Paul at the time. Then why don't we just combine our ideas together and to make it more general? And still, can we give you the operational meaning for such a general circumstances? So their idea. Is about just take the set of free measurements F to be a very, very restricted one, which is trivial measurements, and they gave the operational interpretation as a game and stuff, but we sort of like generalized that idea.
Like
yeah.
The set of free measurements is what's more restricted in there.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thanks.
Yeah. So your result, 6, I think it was, were you restricted to quantum theory? Because you said GPT was kind of funny. Can you explain why
channel
over GPTs?
So for the channel part, so we heavily use the trolley isomorphism structure. So you may need allow yourself to have some like a purification of your mixed states so that this isomorphism works. So yeah, that's the thing. That is
so if your GPT did have this trolley,
yeah, yeah. That would work, I think.
Actually, I had the same question, but maybe let me follow up. So do you say you use Choi isomorphism to prove that, but do you think it's necessary, or did you check whether like you can do it without, or?
Yeah, so these, I'm not sure like there's a possibility to approach without that like, construction. It was, yeah, like the answer is I'm not sure yet. So to show like these results, like I didn't show the proof, but this heavily relies on the convex optimization theory, like a duality and all that. So if you just transform everything to the Choi matrices, and that's kind of, you know, gives you a, you know, kind of clearer and a nicer form to deal with it. But it's an interesting question that you can just directly deal with it. I don't know.
All right, let's take more questions offline. Let's thank you, Gio, again.